I would like the ship to go. Now.
Hello and welcome to Discussing Trek. I am your host, Clarence, and today we're going to be talking all about the best moments. The best moments of Star Trek Discovery Season 1. And for this recap, kind of this tread down memory lane episode, we have none other than Cal Jones to talk it out with us. How you doing, Mr. Jones?
As always, glad to be here and really, really glad to be talking about this. You know, let me take that back. I'm excited to be talking about this because I just binged this entire season this weekend. So I'm awesomely excited to talk about this.
So I think you mentioned this briefly on our last episode. So what's your philosophy going into the last season of a show that you really, really love? Do you go back for each season of any show that you really, really love, or is this new for Discovery with you?
Normally, as usual, I'm going back copying something I do on Doctor Who. Usually when a doctor is about to regenerate, I will go back and watch all of that incarnation's episode leading up to the regeneration episode, just to kind of get a refill of the entire feel of that arc. So I'm really doing the same thing with Discovery, because unlike Doctor Who, going back and watching those episodes a lot, I've not been back to watch series 1, 2, 3, and 4 of Discovery since, you know, they aired. So this was me wanting to reconnect, maybe to get a better feel, not just going in off of side memories, just having a more organic feel. So that's kind of what I'm doing.
Yeah, I know for me with season one of Discovery, of course, I watched maybe twice because we reviewed those episodes. But I know for season 2 and 3, I was really ingrained in those because I wrote written reviews for those as well. So I feel like I retained those a little bit more because I wrote down what was going on. But, you know, I think I'm going to revisit season one as well. I know the clock is ticking on that for me. But I have a question for you, and it has to do with my Star Trek fandom.
Okay.
Am I less of a fan if I watch it at 1.5x speed?
Okay. So I will answer this in this way. I get bored easily. You know, and I have no problem with telling anyone I have ADD. I get bored easy. There was one episode that I watched some of 1.5, but I found myself so engrossed in the story that I really want to challenge the perception that I know that we as a unit, you know, not just any one person, but we as a unit on Discussing Trek, I think have kind of said, oh, well, season one really wasn't Trek. And then they routed ship or righted ship for season two forward. I want to challenge that assumption because I really enjoyed watching this.
Yes, when I just think about the totality of what they did, how epic some of the beats were, and of course the hook with a certain person that wasn't revealed until later, I think was just fantastic. And before we get into our top moments, maybe we can just brush on the things that we didn't like as much. And this is fresh on your mind, but first let me say hello to Wingrace and Tasha in the chat. Thank you guys for being here. But fresh off your mind, things that didn't really land as well as they should have. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I remember we did not like the profanity. Not in the sense of we didn't like profanity in TV. I remember one of the arguments was we didn't like the F-bomb, or we didn't like, you know, any other explicits in Star Trek. And I think that kind of started our road down to this is not your daddy's Star Trek. And, you know, that really didn't faze me watching it this time. Again, I was looking at it not in a I'm trying to pick it apart. I was looking at it as I know these characters and I want to rediscover their beginning.
Yes, interesting. After having seen Picard and, of course, Lower Decks, although I don't think they curse in Lower Decks. I know they do, but I think they maybe beep it out. And of course, in Strange New Worlds, I don't think I've heard anything that extreme. But yeah, to have so many stark changes in the very beginning, and you know, this almost, and I actually read this fact, and I hope it's true, but that this was originally TVMA, and they retroactively bumped it back down to is it TV 14? I can't remember what the next lowest rating is, but they bumped it down. But it was originally TVMA, and the F bombs, the Laurel Vox scenes or Tyler scenes.
Yep.
Yeah, it was definitely a different Trek. And even if you could somewhat get on board with the story, there was so much other things moving at once. There was so many moving parts, interweaving itself with canon, so many parts that the, you know, Trek fan may look at and be like, oh, I don't know if this is my Trek. You know what I'm saying?
So let me ask you a question, if you don't mind. I hate to interrupt you, but let me ask you a question. Do you think this was a more accepting, not an easier, but more accepting watch for me, knowing where we are now, is in where these characters have gone, as opposed to where I may have been when this, what was it, 2017?
Yeah.
When this premiered, having that, oh, this isn't so different from Star Trek.
Oh, I definitely think it was more accepting to you. And I would even dare say, even for people who skipped Discovery and went and watched Picard, because, oh, we're hitting all those old tones from TNG. I feel like you can go back to Discovery now and watch it, and it wouldn't feel as stark. Now, of course, some things like the Klingons, of course, you're going to fuss about maybe, but I don't think it would seem that different. And I think if you add on the good parts, which we're going to get into, of course, but the good parts that they added with Discovery, the just ginormous budget. We're launching a streaming network with this being the flagship show. I think if you put that into account of how much money and production value they put into this first season and many of the subsequent seasons, I think you can look at it in a different light and say, okay, regardless of the reservations I may have had, what, in 2016, 18, whenever this came out, we've seen a different Trek from various angles thus far. Even with Strange New Worlds, maybe retconning some stuff or filling in some gaps or some stuff that, you know, we didn't think we'd ever dabble in anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think at this point, if you go back and watch it, even if you may have just watched a bit of it and skipped it, I think the average Trekkie should be able to dive in and at least appreciate what they're doing here in Discovery.
Yep. So I think it's worth me saying, because I remember being one of the crew who was hard on Tilly at the very beginning. So I think it goes without saying that, once again, I want to say, Mary Wiseman, you have my utmost complete apology for anything that was said during that time, because Tilly did not irritate me this time. She was made to be irritating at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back and watching how much I like the character now and seeing her at the beginning, it's like they wanted that reaction. I'm not absolving anything I said, but it was obvious that they wanted her to be irritating at the very beginning, maybe to show her growth, but still irritating.
Yeah, so interesting how in hindsight you can go and look at all these decisions we had questions about early on that seem weird, that seem off the wall. I don't know if they had the complete plan mapped, but they definitely had a purpose and they made sense in the context of the overall story. Ooh.
Piggybacking off of what you said, the complete plan map, again, not knowing where they wanted to go in seasons, you know, two forward, but as far as season one is concerned, one of the great things that I like about Doctor Who, especially with how Stephen Moffat wrote, as well as Russell T. Davies, was being able to go back and seeing things once you know the big picture,
yeah,
to see how everything was sprinkled within and you just missed it. Well, watching it this time, it's like, oh, this was obvious, but you just didn't see it because you didn't know it.
Wow, man, you're getting me anxious to go back and watch it again with all these tidbits you're throwing in here. So let's just go ahead and get into it. I have 5 items listed on my list of best moments or my top moments. How many do you have, sir?
I have 5 with an honorable mention.
Now, I don't necessarily have mine in order. Do you have yours in order, sir?
You know me well enough to know that I do, but we can go in whatever order you want to go.
Okay, well, I could maybe come up on some fly ordering, on the fly ordering here, so we definitely can do that. But first, let's get your honorable mention moments, man. Let's go ahead and get those.
All right, so honorable mention, on a whole, for the entire first series, the change and the growth of Saru and Michael's relationship from the first episode to, you know, the finale, from adversarial to the beginnings of a camaraderie and friendship that we know that will evolve from there. But that is my honorable mention.
Yeah, it's kind of beautiful. It's kind of beautiful. Tumultuous. Because, man, the way that he looks at Burnham in that episode, I think it was the third episode, when she just pops up on the ship. Man, he was like, you got to go. You got to go. But man, seeing her win back his trust, and I guess you can kind of extend that to the trust of Starfleet, the trust of her crew throughout the season. Now, it might not feel completely earned to some people. That's fair. But yeah, just seeing that journey was pretty amazing to see there in that first season, just the entire arc of it.
So there is a comment from, excuse me, from Wingrace in the chat, and I want to ask Wingrace to elaborate a little bit more on what he means. He says, watching back now, does the pre-discovery stuff still feel as jarring? And Clarence, maybe you can help me there.
Yeah, I'm a little puzzled on that one myself, the pre-discovery stuff. He may be saying, does the aesthetic or... are you talking about the previous shows? The previous shows always seem as jarring? So I don't know.
Yep. So let Wingrace, if you will, please elaborate, and definitely we'll be glad to answer.
Yeah, and welcome to the chat, Marge. So I think we can get right into it, and I will try to, on the fly, give mine in order. And I'll start. Can I start, man? Is that okay?
Go for it. Have at it.
I think first off, we have to say, well, for me personally, I think my number five top moment is just the idea of, again, something that may have turned off everyone when they initially watched it, was the idea of a valued Starfleet first officer being a mutineer. Going against her captain, and not just going against her and getting other people on her side and rallying the troops. No, she went against her, knocked her out, and then went on a bridge and gave a command. If that is not a great moment in Star Trek, one that we haven't seen, I don't think, before, in that, done in that fashion, I just got to give it up, because it instantly had me hooked to learn more about, and we get it in the episode a bit, about how Michael Burnham came on the ship, how Sarek put her under the tutelage of Georgiou, and also just seeing how awesome a captain. I think this is one of the problems we had with the first few episodes. We loved how awesome Georgiou was, and you know what happens to her a little bit later, but yeah, for her to go against somebody who was a mentor, who was valuable to her in so many ways, and make a unilateral decision to incite this war. Now, let me say this. I've seen some articles come up to say that, just talking in general, that Star Trek Discovery Season 1 wasn't that bad. But I will say that maybe the war with Klingons was still inevitable, from the things they were doing, was still inevitable. She just pushed it along a little bit forward, a little bit faster. So, yes, a mutineer. Yeah, she shouldn't have done it, but just kick off a season like that, I thought was fantastic.
Well, in regards to history, you say she pushed it along. That's history. It's happened. That's the way it did happen.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So Wingrace did elaborate on his question, and his question revolves around the stuff on the Shenzhou, the first two episodes particularly.
Yeah, the first two episodes felt a bit like a self-contained little pre-movie before we got the total flip in the third episode. I liked all that stuff. I think one of my biggest disappointments is the fact that, and I was so sad when this happened, the fact that Georgiou didn't make it, because I think all of us were saying, you know, way back in the day we started this podcast, we were reviewing this episode, we were like, oh man, she is like the pinnacle Starfleet captain in the way she presents herself and how she commands the bridge. So when she was gone, I was almost out at that point. I'm like, what? You got Michelle Yeoh and you killed her?
But you know, And from this perspective of they set this up as a show, you don't know what to expect. They took your expectations of what you thought were Star Trek or was Star Trek, and you just totally turned it on its ear.
Yeah.
And in regards to those first two episodes, looking, working back and watching it again, if I had the option to start episode one at episode three, and then they fill in some backstory or see those two first episodes where we see her do the things that she did, to me, I would rather see them like they showed it than have it start with she arriving on Discovery.
That's an excellent point, because so many shows nowadays will just kind of put you in the situation and we'll get flashbacks for the next five episodes. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you 100%, Kyle. I appreciate that they took the time to give us a little mini movie at the very beginning to see the incitement of the war, to see the mutiny. And we didn't have to get that in flashbacks. I really appreciate it now that you bring it up and put it like that. So that's pretty amazing. Let's get your number five. Best moment, sir.
All right. So my number five best moment would be, this is a little abstract, but it's important nonetheless because we watch it every single freaking time, which is the introduction sequence. I loved how they re-envisioned the introduction, and it's beautiful. The music was beautiful, but it was so unique. It was not a ship going through space, but the designs and how they change every year and how they are so integral to you figuring out the story, because there's things hidden, you know, we've already figured that out. There's things in that by the time you get to the end of the season, you realize, oh, that's what all of whatever is.
Do you know what show started doing that first? Because I can't recall myself. I know they did in Picard as well, but do you know what show in general, not even Star Trek related, that started doing something like that first?
I really don't know, to be honest. It's not Doctor Who. I mean, you know, Doctor Who's had its title sequences, but, you know, that just changes with the Doctor, not necessarily integral to the story.
Yeah, and I love how they made artistic decision to not even show it in space. Let's just show this animation, this almost graphic, seeing these different objects and stuff in this graphic type space. I think it was really cool. I really liked how they did that aesthetic, and also the Jeff Russo score for just not just the intro sequence but the entire season, I thought was amazing. So yeah, that's another high perk of the Discovery, high production value, and Jeff Russo's music was amazing, or is amazing, because I think he's still doing it. Wind Grace is suggesting, real quick, when I asked the question, like, what show may have been the first to seed Easter eggs or nuggets in their title sequence, he's suggesting American Horror Story. He says it's a random guess, but that's a good one. That's a good one. I'm going to have to go research that, because it's something I guess I've thought about, but I've never went back to try to see who did it first. If I had to guess, I would have said somebody like Lost or something, but I've never watched Lost.
I was thinking Lost, but I don't think they really did that on the title, but something that does go around what's going on in the story in the season, The Walking Dead, did that, especially in, say, series 6 or 7 forward, and so did Fear the Walking Dead.
All right, guys, we're going to move along, and I'm going to get my number 4, and that's going to be the return of Georgiou, albeit Emperor, insert long name here, Georgiou. Like I mentioned up top, I was just so sad when they killed off Michelle Yeoh. Of course, and a fantastic get to get her on the show. And honestly, for all intents and purposes, I thought it was over. I think the actors, the media, whoever knew what was going on didn't really leak it, at least from what I was read. I don't know if I was in all the circles of Trekkies talking about this at the time, but I heard nothing that she would be back. But, you know, when you think about a foray into the Mirror Universe, when we started to get echoes that we might be going over there, I started to think we may see her again. But yeah, albeit not our Georgiou, but still to have Michelle Yeoh back playing a dastardly devious character. Yeah, I loved when Georgiou came back.
Okay, that was your number 4. So I'm going to hold my comments on your number 4.
Ooh.
Ooh. But I will say that practically your number five was my number four in a way. And my number four is the decision to allow the main character, which I considered to be Michael Burnham, to not be the captain. Well, at least not initially.
Yeah, that was, again, another decision that us as Trek people, folks, look back and say, what? She's not the captain? We're supposed to follow her? Now, honestly, when I think about it and go back to think about other Star Trek shows, I don't know if I ever conceptualized it being about the captain. I may have more conceptualized it being about the crew, which, you know, of course, the captain being the lead of all that. But if I think about other series, maybe with the exception of something like DS9, where Sisko was so integral, you know, to the show, he's the emissary, of course. I don't know if I ever thought about the captain being the main lead. I always thought the crew were, you know, working together to make the show.
And I see your point, but where I get that from is when you hear of a new Star Trek coming out, usually and generally, especially back in the 90s and, you know, during that Voyager TNG era, you always heard who's playing the captain, and then you heard here's who's playing. You never hear, oh, well, who's going to be playing the doctor? Oh, it's blah, blah.
That's fair.
It's who's playing the captain. And that's the way I've always looked at it.
That's fair. And I will say that Marge is hitting all cylinders here by saying that Game of Thrones. Yes. Yes. The Game of Thrones intro definitely was one that gave you Easter eggs, where we was going, what we might be doing. I sat in amazement when people picked those intros apart. I was like, huh?
Yep.
Good point. Yeah, Game of Thrones definitely maybe was one of the first. I totally agree with that. Yeah. So let's move on to our number three. Cal, I'll let you start with your number three first.
All right. Hidden in plain sight, Vok is Tyler.
Oh man, Vok is Tyler. I won't let you hurt me anymore.
But here's why I say hidden in plain sight. Going back and seeing him before he was Tyler and seeing him in the prosthetics and the Klingon, it's like, oh, I know who you are. It's obvious. It's the same actor.
Yeah.
And the plain sight of it all, he's in the credits.
Is
he? And yeah, he's in the credits. If I may be wrong, and I didn't have time to go back and look, but I think when he was playing Vok, he was listed in the credits, in the opening credits. And
oh, wow.
Then you know, he was gone, and then he's back as Tyler. So we just, I think, glossed over that. Just didn't.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
I may be wrong there, but I am 90% sure that I remember his name being in there in the very beginning of the story.
Yeah, for me, this is just another decision. And again, we like the crap. I mean, a lot of people like the crap on it, but I think season one was a series of very bold decisions. Very bold decisions. Now, I'm not going to do the whole Apple thing and say we had courage. When they were talking about their, was it the Apple Watch or something? Some product they said they had courage to do it, whatever. But man, they made some bold decisions. The mutiny part of it, setting it in the time they said it was bold. This whole Vok thing was bold. Lorca was bold. So they definitely were swinging at the fences. And that's why I got to go back and appreciate this season a little bit more, because almost everything they did was, would be divisive, would be very divisive. And yeah, the Vok, Ash Tyler thing, I just thought it was great. I know a lot of people saw it coming very early. I did not. I was one of those people that did not, but yeah, to see it play out, I thought it was amazing. So, and where is Ash Tyler? He's not going to be in a Section 31 movie, is he?
I don't think
he was announced as a cast member. So yeah, I wish we could see that story play out too, but probably won't. All right, let me get my number three, and that's going to be the Spore Drive. Warp, transwarp, Spore Drive. Man, this was another bold decision. Because it's a stretch, right? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people in space traveling on ships with fake gravity and all that stuff through. Anyway, okay, you gotta frame it that way. But in the context of Star Trek, traveling along the mycelial network, the Spore network with a Spore drive. Oh man, that was, again, thing is hard to get your head around to like Discovery. I think for a lot of people, that was another big one. We're going to use this Spore drive to travel around anywhere instantaneously.
But see, what I remember being the argument there was not per se, and it seems like I'm hearing your brother Kerry back in one of those episodes having this argument, which was where we've got this technology, and now we know why we don't have this technology anymore. But
yeah.
The argument was, well, then why isn't all Federation ships now equipped with, you know, why are we still going at warp 9?
Yeah.
And I think at the time, not understanding the full context of the story, that's why it was such a problem.
Yeah, a lot of the things that we had problems with, they were quietly in the background saying, hold your horses, just wait. You know, I think if there's any theme I can give anybody that is a hardcore Trekkie and watching Discovery for the first time, I'll just say, wait, just wait. Don't just wait a little bit. We're going to resolve most of it. Of course, the Klingons are still a problem, but even they tried to even retcon that a little bit and resolve it. But most things, okay, let's be honest here. The Michael Burnham thing is a stretch, being Spock's sister, but still most things they managed to have a story beat to make it make sense in the Discovery world. So yeah, that was definitely one of them.
Agreed. And as our friend Lee Shackelford often says, give me an explanation. And they did, as in regards to Michael Burnham, why we don't hear about her.
Yeah, true. And yeah, the whole tardigrade thing, man, using the tardigrade to to travel alone. Tardigrade in this mycelial net to travel on the mycelial network. And then the whole DNA thing with, you know, genetics and Stamets. And I find it interesting, though. I still, to this day, I think that just going back and looking at it a little bit more objectively, I think you can, it seems like a pretty good idea. And I did enjoy it at the time, I have to say. Mars is saying, I felt so bad for that tardigrade. And then Tasha saying, after she found out it was in pain, it did bother me. Yeah.
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 But, you know, again, one of the things that they, you know, layered throughout was with Lorca, and I hope I'm not stealing anything, but with Lorca. Okay.
Let me pause you and let me get my number two.
Okay.
Captain Gabriel Lorca. Now go ahead, sir. And then I'll expand on it.
Okay. So, you know, you go back and you watch it again and you see all these signs that something's up with him and you just didn't know what, you know, that was. So
it's funny because with season 5, they're saying that Captain Raynor, the Romulan captain, that's going to be the captain of some other ship in season 5, is supposed to be gruff and kind of hard to deal with. We kind of had that in Lorca, right?
Yes.
Lorca was kind of a menace and I loved it. I love it now. Let me say that. Maybe not so much then, but of course we know why he was the way he was, but just seeing a wartime captain, of course we've seen others, but this was one with, I would say, zero morality. He just wanted to win. He was willing to do whatever he had to do to win. Now we know if you go a little bit further, you keep watching the story, we know that it was served in his purpose to get back to the Mirror Universe. And just a twist we get with him. I mean, I think from the beginning, we knew something was wrong. We knew something was wrong with Lorca, even though we could probably see a wartime captain acting that way. But we knew something was wrong with Lorca. And when it becomes a little bit more clear on his intentions, I just think, again, another awesome story beat that you just had to wait to see. Because I know by this time, a lot of people that I know are out.
They're already out. Understood.
Yeah, but I love Lorca, man. I want to see prime Lorca. Let's bring Jason Isaacs back, man. He's amazing. All right, man, what's your number two?
All right, number two for me was something that I forgot until watching it through this time, that it was such a big shift, was changing directions of the main plot practically three-fourths of the way through. While in a way it really wasn't changing the direction after all, because I think it was the intent of the overall story to go to the mirror universe, you know, in episode 10, and then have the mirror universe through 10 through, I think, what, 16?
Mm-hmm.
But you go into the beginning as a viewer thinking, okay, this season is going to be about starting the war and ending the war, which it ultimately was.
Yeah.
But you didn't expect, you know, or at least watching it, you know, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, I'm thinking, oh, well, this entire season is going to be, how do we progress to the end of the war? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about this. We went to the mirror universe.
For me, I love the curveball with going to the mirror universe, but also I didn't like it. I love the story that it presented from the sense of we're going to see how this false Lorca got there and, you know, what his intentions were, and we're going to bring Giorgio back. I love those aspects of it, you know, just seeing a darker side of as we did way back in TOS, seeing a darker side of the Federation or Terran Empire. So I like that. I like that. I like that we went there. But at the same point, I feel like it failed. While it was a triumph in that aspect, I think it failed the overall story. And it did in the sense of once we did finally get back to the Prime Universe, it felt like it was just, bop, boop, it's over. War's over. We're done. So the end of the war for me personally didn't feel earned. And that's just from the aspect of we were in the mirror universe. We really didn't see what was happening. And then on top of that, the fact, and I know they said they sent the Enterprise away because we needed to save one ship or whatever excuse they use. At the very end, the Enterprise shows up. Like, where were you like this entire time while we're fighting this war? So things like that, you know. But I just went on a whole rant while you were trying to give your
No. It was that honestly didn't bother me this watch through. Because maybe I missed I missed the concept of sending the Enterprise away.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like the build up at the very end where they're slowly putting the numbers 1-7.
Yeah, it was,
you know,
cool.
You're seeing that, and then you see the ship arrive and you don't see any of the crew,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I even went into season 2, episode 1, and I stopped and I said, no, I don't want to get into it. I want to remember for this review, just season 1.
Yeah. It's a hell of a cliffhanger, man. So, hey. Kudos for that, because that was a killer cliffhanger, which they did for a couple of seasons. They had some pretty good cliffhangers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, kudos from them in that aspect. Man, I'm ready to get into my number one. Would you like to go first? Would you like me to give my number one?
No, I want you to go first. I want to hold my number one.
My number one is going to harken back to a thing you mentioned earlier, which is Burnham's arc. And I'm going to say my number one is Burnham's redemption. And we can kind of sum it up in this picture we have here at Federation headquarters, where they were instrumental in ending the war, and Burnham had a big part in that. And by the end, you could definitely see the story they were trying to tell. They wanted to show a story of knocking someone down to the lowest of lows, even though it was her fault, but somebody descending to the lowest of lows. And then coming back from that. So I think from a human aspect, seeing that story, seeing that you can be redeemed, seeing that even though she was extremely lucky in some situations, but seeing that where you are is not where you have to end up. And of course, this very gifted first officer coming back and being able to, you know, just have a place at the table after being, you know, in the lowest of lows. She's not back as a first officer. She's just on the ship as a specialist.
Yep.
And I think that's a very interesting story to see somebody make that journey.
And while her record does get expunged at the end in this episode, it is also a testament of, yes, you do have to live with the consequences of the decisions that you make, but your decisions that you make do not ultimately define you for eternity. You know, you're not beholden. Consequences, yes, but not beholden to them forever.
Yeah, so. And once you get the opportunity to make things right, seizing it 100%, and that's what she did. So, yeah, just a great journey. Mr. Jones, what is your number one, sir?
All right, so for me, my number one, and yes, I did make up a word in my number one, but I'm
Mavity?
Going to go with it. No, not Mavity. I am going to say the introduction of her empratic that's my made up word, Empratic, Regency, the Giorgio above all Giorgios, Emperor Giorgio.
Oh, man. So what made this your number one moment, man?
Well, if you'll remember, right about the time that she exited in, what was it, season three, was it? Maybe it was either season three or season four when the character exited. I was like, the episode before my beats was this big long thing about how much I loved this character.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just like a strong, bad,
you do,
witty, you do, female lead character, and she fits the bill. So don't get me wrong. She was awesome as, you know, prime universe Giorgio, but she is so evil. It's good.
Oh, I can't complain with you there, man. Just seeing her fight. Hey, I'm here for the Michelle Yeoh combat in Discovery. I'm here for that alone. In addition to everything else, but still, yeah. Giorgio, amazing. I mentioned her before. The return of Giorgio, I think, was just a awesome surprise in some aspects. So I really loved it. And, you know, just now in Year of Our Lord 2024, we're just now seeing sort of the fruition of what was planted. The seed was planted at the end of season one, was that she joined Section 31. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we did see it in season two. We saw a lot of it in season two, her working with Section 31. But, you know, we're coming back for this whole movie with her helming the movie, and I'm guessing a crew for the Section 31 movie. So to see that journey continue to play out, I think is really interesting as well.
You know, Marge has an interesting question and a comment. She says, "I bow to Emperor Giorgio, so do I."
Indeed.
And her question is, what did you guys think of the design of the Klingons in season one?
Would you like to go first?
Didn't like it. Didn't bother me as much this time. I headcanon say that they are a subset that we saw. You know, that they're not all Klingons look alike, and the ones we saw just happened to all be bald. Yeah, or they were so stressed out because they were fractioned into 24 houses that their stress made them not have hair.
Deep knowledge. Deep. And I think they may have said wartime, they're bald. I don't know where that comes from.
I'll go with that, wartime bald.
But yeah, okay. Do I like the season one Klingons and Discovery? I love the ambition. Again, I love that they took big swings. They took a big swing by doing that. And I think for me, what would have made it better is I think they did it without attempting to have an answer for it. They just said, oh, well, people don't care. People don't care as much as they used to. We're just going to do it anyway. It's a new interpretation. People can, you know, reframe their mind into this different modern take on this same era. A bold choice, I'll say that, but it was so different. But I by the same token, I do love it. I love that it was very ambitious. I love that they have the different designs for the different houses, as you just mentioned, Kyle. And you know, if you're giving a reinterpretation of an era, I think it was probably a good one. You know, it was them saying, if we were to do the Klingons today, how would we do them? Now, again, as I mentioned, you have a huge problem with all these years of canon that they've been retconned once, you're retconning them again in 2016 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was a need for it. They could have took the similar designs and just tweaked them. But again, they made a decision to like do it totally different.
Yeah. You know, if I were, and even in season two, they kind of backtrack on that a little bit, as we will see. But I will say, while they looked interesting, I think if I could pick out one thing that they did that I think that I don't think they should have done, that would be my one thing. Not because I dislike how they looked, but making them, forcing them into canon. Yeah. They never offered up an explanation as to that. Now, the Michael Burnham and the Discovery, they satisfied that. But the look, if you would have said it, say, 300 years in the future of after TNG, then you could have said, well, something happened to them that mutated them or whatnot. And then there you go. There's your explanation. But yeah, that's the only thing that I would say didn't work. Yeah. But I do want to go ahead.
No, I was going to say real quick. I wonder if the Section 31 movie will clean up any loose ends in that era. Because I would think that it would be a time travel type deal.
Mm.
I guess we don't know exactly where JoJo is going. But if she winds up back in that time frame, it could somehow touch that storyline again, maybe.
When Grace brings up an almost identical question, which is, what, going back and watching through season one, did anything particularly stand out as being ripe for follow-up in the final season?
Mm.
Prime Lorca.
Yes. Oh, man. I just need that standalone, you know, two-hour special feature event. Oh, man, because that would be amazing. Yeah. That's the only loose end I can really think from, you know, just off the top of my memory from season one. You know, Lorca maybe explained to Klingons. Like you said, Cal in season two, they did attempt to explain it, so, but whatever. But yeah, maybe I have to dive a little deeper and see if I can think of anything else. Because, of course, we're probably not going to see it tied up in season five because they didn't know that was their last season.
True.
But yeah, it would be interesting to see if there is anything there that could have been tied up.
Too true.
Everyone in the chat, what was your, if you look back and try to remember, what was your favorite moments from season one? I should ask this question up top. But if you have a favorite moment from season one, please drop it in the chat as we kind of wrap up things here. Kyle Jones, as we wrap up and get ready for, I guess we're going to do season two next week, try to progress to Star Trek Discovery season two. So if you're in the chat and you want to watch along and kind of come back with your favorite moments, you can join us as well. Just as an aside, you have anything else that you want to plug or talk about or, you know, kind of tease that might be coming up in the Discussing Network world?
Well, as of course, you know, the new season whatever, I'm going to call it season 24, the first season that is on Disney Plus of Doctor Who will be airing in May of this year. So that's coming up sooner and sooner and sooner. And then we are, of course, going through the series 9 or the 2015 series of Doctor Who with Clara Oswald and the 12th Doctor. So that's on discussingwho.com.
Awesome sauce. And I'm going to tell anybody in the chat, I think everyone that I know is there is already locked in, but if you're not following our friends Wynn Grace and Tasha, you should definitely follow them on YouTube to keep up with all the news, the latest news and events happening in the Star Trek world and beyond. So definitely check those channels out. And you want to pick up a few comments before we head out of here real quick, Cal?
Sure.
Let's see what we got here. Oh, Wynn Grace is saying he has a theory about Lorca, but he won't spoil it by blurting it out without research. Cool. Well, I can't wait to hear that on your channel. Check out the Wynn Grace Project. And he is mentioning Mud. I did love the Mud time loop Groundhog Day episode. I had fun with that. I don't think Lee liked it, our friend Lee Shackford. I don't think he liked it because he didn't really love their interpretation of Mud. But I love that episode. I thought it was real fun.
And that was one of the ones that I kind of, now that I remembered, I didn't even really remember that one. That was the one that I almost literally fast forwarded all the way through.
Oh man, it's a fun episode, man. I love that episode. The space whale? Oh, anyway. All right, guys, with that, we're going to wrap up. Hit us up here next week as we talk about season two. And also, if you're into Star Trek books, we are actually reviewing the autobiography of Benjamin Sisko. Those are going to be done on our Patreon. It's going to be a time release, so eventually it'll be for everybody. But at first, it's going to be on our Patreon. So if you want to check that out, you can check it out on our Patreon, where me and John, former host John Schwartz,
oh, cool,
is going to be reviewing those. And we already have one episode up, so check that out. And with that, guys, thank you all for joining. And until next time, live long and prosper. Thanks for listening to the Discussing Trek podcast. For more information, go to discussingtrek.com/subscribe.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.
Can I say that, like, shut up, Wesley? I can just go, shut up, Clarence?